Welcome to Show 77. Something a little different. We are recording live at Bosco's.
Bosco's Brew Pub in Overton Square in Memphis, Tennessee.
And what you're about to hear is live. Viewer discretion is advised. And it isn't pretty in some parts. The audio, it got a little loud, and the audio got a little hot. So just be forewarned, but it's a great conversation with owners, brewers, chefs, and patrons of Brewpub.
Some of the best beer conversation we've had in a while. It's a good listen.
So enjoy.
They take your love and your money. They take your sugar and your honey. They take your skinny or fat. Why are people like that? They take your dog and your car. They try to push you too far. Break your heart, leave you flat. Why are people like that? They take your child and your home. They take your flesh and your bone. They take your heart, leave you flat. Oh, why are people like that? They make you sleep in the street. They give you nothing to eat. All behind your back. Oh, why are people like that? They take your farm and your crop. They take everything you got. Laugh behind your back. Oh, why are people like that? Oh, why are people like that? Why are people like that? I don't know why they act like that. Oh, why are people like that?
That was a little tap, Benoit, and as mentioned before, we're here live at Bosco's. This is kind of a first for us doing a podcast from a brew pub.
Yeah, we've been promising to come to Bosco's for a little over a year now when we first did our promotional video, and they were generous enough to let us do the video from Bosco's here. So we're here, finally.
Yeah, finally.
We're joined by Chuck Skypeck, the brewmaster, owner, proprietor of Bosco's.
We're glad to see you guys.
Well, we're glad
to be here. Thank you for inviting us.
My pleasure.
We've been out here before, and we love the beers, of course, and in Memphis, I read something. Well, first, I've got to set the stage. This is American Craft Beer Week, the week of May 14th. And I read an interesting fact. It says most Americans live within 10 miles of a craft brew pub. Well, that would be most Americans. That does not include people who live in Collierville.
Or Arkansas, or Mississippi,
pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, we got Bosco's in Little Rock.
Well,
so
that's true.
So if you're
that's
within
true.
10 miles of the Bosco's in Little Rock, you are within 10 miles.
I think in the Mid-South region, you're within 100 miles of a brew pub.
I think the website I looked at last week or the week before only had two brew pubs in Arkansas.
There's four breweries in Arkansas. There's Bosco's and Vino's, both brew pubs in Little Rock. There's Diamond Bear, which you guys reviewed just recently, in Little Rock. And then there is former Fayetteville Brewing Company. I think it's now called Hog House in Fayetteville.
Okay.
So there are four breweries.
Yeah, John's the one that turned us on to the Diamond Bear show. He was in Little Rock.
We had met them with the St. Mary's Oktoberfest, but yeah, John did bring it.
That was great. He brought us some beer back, and we had a really good show. We enjoyed it.
The interesting thing is when you're looking at beermapping.com, which is kind of an interesting site. I don't know if you visited it.
I've seen it.
But Dick is right. The Mid-South is kind of a barren wasteland of breweries.
Oh, you guys, nothing compared to when we opened in 1992. When we opened the first brew pub, Bosco's, in Germantown in 92. Even more so. The closest brew pub at that time was 300 miles.
300 miles, wow. So you didn't even have any competition from Nashville, huh?
Market Street was operating there as a micro,
okay,
but not as a brew pub. The Germantown location was the first brew pub in Tennessee. The closest brew pub to us at that time was Shafley's in St. Louis.
Now, we've talked about brew pubs before and encouraged people to get out and go visit them because pretty much everywhere else, they are close. And this is where you can go and get real beer. And in that sense, I mean, not the mass-produced beer. And at a micro brew, you get a level of beer that I personally think is superior to a bottle.
Well, I'm a brew pub guy, always have been. People always say, when are you going to put your beer in bottles? I tell them when I'm ready to go broke. It's a different business. But to me, brew pub beer is really the essence, because what is craft beer? What are the attributes of craft beer that I think are really important? And that is freshness and variety. And you don't get it fresher than you do at a brew pub. And we brew 7-barrel batches here. And that's the equivalent of 14 kegs. And for some of our best-selling beers, like our IPA, we run through those 14 kegs in about 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
So, you know, you're not getting anything any fresher than that. And since we brew in small batches, with our special beers, we'll present almost 50 different varieties of beer a year.
Well, we don't have quite 50, but we got quite a few laid out.
Yeah, let's start with the first one. We got the Hefeweizen, which I'm looking at the menu here. It says 2005 Great American Beer Fest Gold Medal winner and 2006 Great American Beer Fest Silver Medal winner.
I'm very, very proud of those two medals, because that's a very hotly contested category at the Great American Beer Festival, and to repeat with medals like that in that competition, which is like the Olympics of beer, makes me very proud.
I just had my first taste. That's fantastic. I've been here before, and you haven't had it on tap. So this seasonal, I guess?
Well, seasonal. We brew it. We'll probably brew about, well, we brewed it back-to-back. It's a separate yeast than your usual house yeast. So it's logistically, we have to make sure that we have the yeast. What we did this time was we actually just brewed two pretty much back-to-back. As soon as we could harvest yeast from the first batch, we brewed a second one, because we know it's going to go really fast. Now we'll repeat a back-to-back, two brews like that, probably about July or so. So it's a summer seasonal for us that we, you know, bring out. It's a light, refreshing, easy-drinking beer. So
oh, it's
summer,
fantastic.
Summertime.
I just tasted it. Perfect, actually.
Well, we've learned to work this yeast a little bit. If you like the fruity flavors,
yes,
some Hefeweizens tend to be a little bit clovey or phenolic tasting, and we really try to emphasize the banana or the fruity character in there. It's what our customers really respond to. We get the fermentation temperature up a little bit, and we really bring out those fruity fruity flavors, those fruity esters.
And I notice you don't garnish it excessively with fruit and umbrellas.
You know, the Germans don't garnish their Hefeweizens. That's somehow that got started in America. If you garnished a Hefeweizen with a lemon or an orange in Germany, you'd be run out of town on a rail. We will garnish your Hefeweizen if you want it, but we serve them straight up. We figure that after you pay for it, if you want to ruin it with a lemon, it's your beer. So.
And we've got a whole fleet of beers, and we are just coming up. It's like middle of May now, May 14th, American Beer Week, Craft Beer Week, day after Mother's Day, and 9 days out from our next beer, which is the Cinco de Mayo.
Bosco's.
So Bosco de Mayo.
Bosco de Mayo.
Either yeah. one, interchangeable even.
No, Bosco de Mayo.
We're cross-branding.
I was calling it Cinco de Bosco, so why not?
We originally said Cinco de Bosco.
I like that name. I'm going to stick with it. That's celebrating the Bosco's victory over the French in
that's right. Little known historical note.
The battle for the...
Well, that's true. People often look at Cinco de Mayo as Mexican Independence Day. That would be September 16th.
Right.
And... interestingly, Cinco de Mayo really isn't celebrated in Mexico, except in the state of Puebla, where the Mexican army defeated the French back in 1864, 63, something of that nature. But it's become a great American holiday for drinking, for Americans drinking a lot of cheap Mexican beer and overpaying for it.
So what do Mexicans know about brewing beer?
Well, Mexicans actually know a whole lot because there's an awful lot of good beers coming out of Mexico. I say that tongue in cheek. I mean, Corona is Mexico's cheap beer. If you go to Mexico and want a cheap beer, you get Corona. And they know about marketing beer because they can bring their cheap beer to the United States and get gringos to pay $7 a six pack for it.
That's pretty smart. Fantastic advertising campaign.
Because it's imported.
Because it's imported. But Germany's brewing tradition. I mean, the Aztecs used to brew corn beer, okay?
Yeah, I believe they kind of the first on record, if I remember it.
Yeah, a long time ago. But as far as European-style brewing, the Germans' tradition is Germanic or Austrian in origin from the time that Germany was a colony of Austria with Emperor Maximilian there. And so all the brews like that you see, like Dos Equis, Negra Modelo, those are truly German or Austrian style products. And, you know, so there's like Buenas Noches. I don't know if you guys have ever had that one.
Good night beer.
Yeah. Okay. There's some really good.
I've had a lot. I've had Sol, Pacifica, Bohemia, El Presidente.
I've seen the Negro Modelo. Is that a decent beer?
Oh, that's like a dark German style lager, and it's
pretty good beer.
Yes.
So there's a lot of.
Yeah,
German.
You took the bait. I was trying to lead you into the Germans settling in Mexico.
So. Well, yeah, they settled in Mexico, and if you even think about it, into Texas too, because there's a strong. If you think about like Scheinerbach and some of the other breweries in southern Texas, are also that same area, that same time of settlement of a lot of German families in both Mexico and southern Texas, and that's where those brewing traditions began. Now, our Bosco's de Mayo, we always wanted to brew a sort of a high-end Mexican style beer, but we typically don't do a lot of lager beers because of time constraints. But this beer is fermented with our house yeast, but essentially it's a Vienna style lager and has a lot of toasty, malty character in it, and then just a nice hint of fruitiness coming through because it's not overly hopped and it's not covering up that fruitiness that we get from our yeast. So a subtle fruitiness in it with that nice toasty malted flavor from the Vienna style malt.
Well, I like this, and I started drinking on this and then switched to the Hefeweizen, and I ordered the one of my favorites, the fish tacos, that is, you tell me, is seasonal on the menu. There's some spicy little tacos, and this is a very nice beer to accompany that.
That's a great observation. A brown beer like this, whether it's a brown ale or a German ale or a brownish German style lager, you almost can't go wrong. They go good with so many different types of dishes. And if you think about the Mexicans with their hot food, a brown beer like this with just a little bit of subtle maltiness and sweetness would really go well with any type of hot food.
And the lack of refrigeration and the heat, so yeah, they had their own special flavor for beer.
Well, that's true to a certain extent. I mean, they didn't really start brewing these types of beers in Germany until commercial refrigeration was available.
Oh, okay. Mm.
That was 1860s, 1870s.
And you've got a lot more food pairings. We talked about the food pairings earlier on your menu. Along with each food item on there, you recommend the types of beer.
We make a recommendation for every food item in our menu. We group our beers into five main pairings or cellars, and that gives our customers a guide to, there may be more than one beer in a cellar with our special beers, and it gives our customers a guide and ideas to formulate. When people think about pairing food with an alcoholic beverage, everybody thinks about wine first. If you think about the flavors in beer, there's such a wider range of flavors in beer than there is in wine. Wine's fruit-based, and that you get a lot of subtle, nice flavors in there, but with beer, you also get caramel-like flavors that aren't going to be in wine, roasted flavors that aren't going to be in wine. There's just such more flexibility when you start to put beers with foods instead of wines, and so we want to get people thinking that way, so we make those recommendations.
And we're going to have your chef out later on to kind of talk to us a little more in depth about food and beer pairings. We've got a lot more beers to go. Maybe tap a cast.
We got a table full of beer.
And hopefully we're going to get to
music coming.
Got some more music. Hopefully we'll get to talk to some of the regulars lining the bar at Bosco's and get the inside scoop of what's like to be on the other side of the bar. And so let's take another musical break. We'll come back and try some more beers with Chuck and the rest of the folks here at Bosco's. A little more Tab in Law.
Spinning round, thinking thoughts of you. Oh, baby, I'm thinking about you. I get so mixed up now, babe, I don't know what I do. Oh, baby, I don't know what to do. Well, I better pack it up, I better give it up. I'm gonna get you right out of my life. Give it up. I'm gonna get you right out of my life. Well, my head is spinning round, thinking thoughts of you, baby. Don't come back again. Every time I try to talk to you, baby, you tell me you ain't got time. Oh, no, I don't know what's wrong. I better give it up. I'm gonna get you right out of my life. Oh, pack it up. Oh, give it up. I'm gonna get you right out of my get you right out of my life.
get you right out of my life.
That was Tab Benoit, and as we said before, the show is being recorded live, so we don't quite have our music inventory set up. Go to the website, and we'll try and list the shows or the songs that we play. So we're joined by Bosco's head chef, Tim Barker, and we're going to talk about some beer food pairings and also cooking with beer.
Right.
We're discussing Dick's Chipotle beer.
Yeah.
And cooking with that.
But we're not going to talk about my beer.
Dick wants this to be all about him.
Yes.
But we have a chef here, so let's hear from the chef instead.
So, Tim, you got here, you arrived at Bosco's, and Chuck is just all enthusiastic about what all you're going to be doing.
Great.
So tell us a little bit about what it is you're going to be doing.
Well, we do beer dinners here, as most people know. Generally, what they do is they pair food with beer, but they don't actually cook with the beer like at a wine dinner. And so we're going to try to actually prepare the food with the beer and then pair it with the same beers like you would in a wine dinner.
Okay, so you mean we would eat something that was cooked with the same beer we're tasting?
Right.
Okay, well, that's a little different approach. I've seen other websites that do beer and food pairings, and they don't necessarily make that a part of it. But Chuck was alluding to earlier, beer is so diverse in the taste that you can pair it with all kinds of a lot of different pairings.
Right.
And I like the idea of being able to introduce it as your dinner was cooked with that as well.
Right. It's the same concept that you get from a wine dinner.
So the flavors ought to enhance the food themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Bring out some of the flavors of the food. The food ought to bring out some of the characteristics of the beer.
It's just taking the food and beer pairing to another level. It'll just be a little more almost.
So give us a for example beer dinner.
Well, Chuck and I are going to sit down tomorrow and actually plan the beer pairing, so I'm not really sure what he's going to want to put
for
the
National Brew Month, their beer week.
American Craft Beer Week.
There we go.
Like, what would you recommend for the fish tacos that Dick had a while ago?
The tuna tacos from here?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what Chuck pairs with that. I think he's got it on the menu. I'm sure it's a lighter beer. Actually, it's kind of spicy, so he may have paired the IPA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I usually get. My kind of rule of thumb is, because I like a lot of spicy food, the spicier the food, the hoppier the
beer.
The
hoppier you want it.
But I had the Hefeweizen, and I guess it depends on what you're trying to accomplish. I like heat, but it seemed like if I drank a Hefeweizen or a maltier beer, it cuts the heat. So it depends on whether you want to accentuate it or scale it back.
Right. But I guess you got to look at sometimes certain times of the day, depending on what what's going on. I mean,
beers.
Yeah, just
what
all
does go with eggs.
It just all. I mean, if it's a hot day, you're kind of more in the mood for a lighter beer.
Definitely.
If it's a cold day, you're more in the mood for a thicker, maltier beer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of variety there.
Well, and of course, what you're eating with it, though, I think the darker, heavier ales go good with desserts.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I know that if you cook with beer, you have to worry about the IBUs of the beer imparting bitterness to the food that you're cooking.
Right.
So that happens. You have to be considerate about the amount you reduce it.
Yeah, that happens in the reduction. So what we're doing is I've been tasting a lot of wort, just sort of getting a feel for the worts and how I can use the worts as an ingredient, and then pair it with the beer that the wort is.
So the wort being the sweet liquid drawn off the grain prior to being kettle boiled and hopped, right?
If I can jump in here, one of the things that we've done at a beer dinner that is just really, really catches people's eyes is we've made ice cream with that wort, like from a porter or a stout.
Oh, and, well, I imagine it's good, right?
Oh, prior to hopping. And if you think about it, you guys enjoy malts?
Yes, very much.
I mean, in essence, that's what an unhopped wort is a malt. And so a porter or a stout-based wort ice cream is just fabulous.
What do they call malted milk balls or something? Whatever you get from the theaters, whenever you go.
A malted milkshake.
Yeah.
That's malted barley or malted barley syrup is what that is.
Wow. Sounds
make
good.
Beer out of it.
And I know that they are adding.
Nuts, you're on your way.
They are adding a lot of chocolates to foods these days. So
we were talking about the different beer pairs, and you got anything on your plate, figuratively, that you're thinking about that you've got, like you just mentioned ice cream. I had mentioned ice cream and pudding earlier. So what kind of, have you got a dish in mind that you know you're going to do with one of the beers?
Yes. I think I'm going to try to use a malt extract. And I might have to mix it with a little honey, but we're going to try to use that to glaze a rack of lamb. So we'll have like a malted rack of lamb with a summer squash and maybe Hefeweizen risotto.
Oh, that sounds great.
As one of the meat courses. And also looking at doing a beer. It's a beer bouillabaisse. So it's a fish stock, and then you cook a lot of you cook vegetables and seafood and sear fish. And you serve it almost as a soup, as like a brothy entree.
Very nice.
My wife's from Wisconsin. They serve bouillabaisse all the time. So.
But, the thing that I think most people know about when they hear about food made with beer, it used to be real popular around here in Memphis, is beer, cheese, soup.
Oh, yeah.
It can't get more simpler than that. You had beer, you had cheese, warm it up, done.
We do that soup here.
Yeah?
Often.
So which beer? Can you choose which beer cheese soup you want?
Typically it's done with the stone beer, which is a little milder, so you don't have to worry
about
getting bitter when you cook it down. And it does have a nice sweetness in it that lends itself to the cheese. That recipe has actually been published nationally in
And John was asking about that earlier, but in regards to yeast. But so these recipes and the things that you're coming up with, we'll know by virtue of the menu what kind of beer you're using.
Yes.
But is this something, do you ever have people ask you about, how did you make that? I mean, I can expect this coming up when you start doing a lot more cooking.
Sure.
And is that something you're going to be willing to share with people because they can't get your beer?
Oh, yeah, generally speaking, yes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm speaking a little bit for my restaurant partners here, but strictly, probably 99% of it, and every once in a while there's maybe a little smidgen that we feel like might be proprietary.
But the secret,
we can say this would work in its place. So 99% yes.
Well, of course, if you're cooking with the wort, though, like you said, it hasn't had that last hop addition or any hop additions, then that's not quite the same.
It's going to bring out a lot of the malt characteristics of the beer.
Yeah, which I think is a good thing. But,
it's the base of the beer.
But yeah. I will also be cooking with finished beer, as in the risotto will be deglazing the pan with the beer to sort of set those flavors into the rice.
I think that goes back to check what you were saying earlier. Depending on the outcome of the product, if you want a little tang, if you want a little sweet, that's going to kind of dictate the beer. I mean, despite the fact that there are hops in almost every beer, if not every beer, it's the level of, you were saying, Rick, earlier, the IBUs.
The IBUs coming to play.
The IBUs on it is going to have a lot to do once you start doing the reduction of it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think hops go away.
No.
Well, hops, when you do a reduction, they if anything, concentrate.
Right.
And hops, you know, hops are great to cook with. You just got to cook beer with them. Is that simple?
Yeah. Right. Okay. That's funny. All right, those of you didn't quite catch it, he's saying that hops are good when you're cooking beer.
We got to put you on the spot here. Now, you see this massive table of beers we got laid out before us, and I'm sure, in your job description, you have to be on the intimate terms with each and every one. Name your top three beers.
Let's see. I like the Midtown Brown a lot. I like the IPA is my favorite beer. It's my favorite IPA ever. Let's see, what else?
And you're not just saying that because your boss is sitting next to you, right?
No. let's see. What's the porter?
We've been running through a lot of different styles of porter: an American style that's called Ed's, an English style that's called London, and then the strong one, which is called Baltic. But you're lacking the London. Yeah, you know,
English is fantastic.
Which one now?
English porter.
English porter.
Yeah. Well, so that's kind of a diversity in taste. That's good to hear.
We did a porter show not long ago, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and there is a big diversity in styles that you can get. The English is a lot more mellower, a little caramely, toppy, more malt, towards the malt side, I guess, of the American porters. And, of course, we're having the Germantown Alt, which is got a little smoked porter sort of character.
Well, we're tying up the head chef during rush hour. So,
well, Tim, I'm glad you could drop by and give us a few minutes. And great stuff. Look forward to the inaugural beer pair dinner coming up. When is that?
Not really inaugural. Well, Tim's inaugural.
It's my first.
Tim's inaugural. Right.
It'll be July 17th.
Okay, very nice. Okay, and as always, on the menu, beer pairings, suggested beers to pair with food are available. Beer Boscos, huh?
All the time.
Okay. So do we want to bring in the next beer during this segment or the next?
Let's go ahead and bring in our next beer. And what are we doing? We've got a few more minutes.
Chuck, we're enjoying your...
thank you.
Thank you.
Original ale.
The original alt. And we started off with that at the top of the show before we even got into it.
Practice.
So we have promoted the Smoking Blues.
Well, this beer has been brewed in its original form, was one of our very original beers back in 1992 that we brewed when we opened in Germantown, and it's always been a real customer favorite. not many breweries in the U.S. make an alt.
There are a couple up in Wisconsin in that area.
And I always, even in 92, I felt like I wanted to do something to try to set us apart. So instead
of a classic style, I mean, it is. To me, you know, the people are always looking for the difference in species. You know, when did the evolution change? To me, this is the evolution between an ale and a lager.
Well, absolutely. I mean, most German beers are lagers, and this is really a throwback before Louis Pasteur figured out to tell brewers that, hey, you've got two different kind of yeast here, ale and lager, and before that time, Germans were using a mixed yeast, which was ale and lager yeast mixed together.
So it's about the coldest fermenting ale yeast you can get, right?
Yep, that is correct. That is correct.
And this, I'd just point out that this is one of the reasons why you want to go to a brew pub. You'll find things like this. You'll find alt beers. You'll find experiments. You'll find a lot of things that you're not going to be able to go to the grocery store and pick up. And it's a good way to experience many different styles. And I know you've got a board out front where you say, here's what's on the cask. Here's the beer. And like you say, a 7-barrel system. That's tiny. I mean, literally, for, you know, in terms of...
But serves the needs of the restaurant.
Well, sir, I don't think people don't keep statistics on things like this, but I haven't met too many breweries in the United States, too many pub breweries, that brew more beer per square foot than we do.
because if you guys have been back there in the brewery, you know it's a small room.
We know that Jimmy's a busy boy.
Yeah, yeah. We know you're cranking it out, but the fact is, like you said earlier, it's fresh, it can be diverse as you'd like it to be, and it lets you customize, it lets you, like this alt that we're drinking out, it's got a little bit of the smoked
Right, we put just a little bit of smoked malt in there for our Blues and Brews event that you guys helped us promote. A fundraiser for the International Blues Foundation here in Memphis with John Hammond playing, and it went over very, very well. It was a great day.
Sold out event, correct?
We were going to sell up to 100 tickets. We didn't get quite there, but...
Oh, okay.
It
was probably 98.
You had 21 when we last talked to you.
Oh, no, it was like 76 or 77.
Yeah.
And that was 100%. A lot of times when you see these charity events, they're saying portion of the proceeds are donated to whatever. This was 100% charity event for the Blues Foundation.
So the alt beer is one of the many styles that you've brewed over the years.
I'm glad you're keeping it on your menu. Is it going to become a regular, or bring it into rotation more often? Or?
Well, it comes into the rotation probably 3 or 4 times a year because it's popular. We brew this beer all the time. It is a regular beer in Nashville, or in the Nashville Boscos.
Oh, okay.
The reason it's not regular here may sound kind of odd. We tried to put it on our menu as a regular beer when we opened this location. This is truly just a Memphis thing. We called it by its original name, the Germantown Alt, and our customers in Memphis don't have, if you understand that Memphis and Germantown have a little bit of rivalry, our customers in Memphis didn't want anything to do with something named Germantown.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, right.
And so we had a special beer brewed, a brown ale, we called it the Midtown Brown. And it just slid right in that spot and fortunately bumped the alt to a special status.
Well, there are bumper stickers that Midtown is Memphis. Dix, give us the signs and let's wrap up this segment.
Yeah, we've got another tab in wine for you to enjoy. And coming up next, something you'll find at brewpubs everywhere, the tapping of the keg. We've got a special beer coming out and some lucky person will get to tap the keg on some cask brewed dry stout.
I'd have to look at the schedule honestly to tell you. That sounds right though.
Okay, well that's what our server told us earlier. We're looking forward to it. We'll be right back.
Benoit. Hope you enjoyed those great sounds. Not sure which song it was.
No, we don't know. It'll be on the website.
We just heard about the Memphis in May Music Festival.
Yeah, a grand time was that.
And we're getting ready.
I'm sorry to set you up like this, but you know.
So I think they're drawing.
We're drawing for the tapping of the keg, and holy cow!
Rick gets to go tap the keg. So Rick is like I think he's pouring wood. Cover yourself. He's getting his dream. He's going out there to tap a keg.
I think Rick's going to get his cherry.
I think I see a little tear in his eye. So this is what they do. Gosh, just all the time here.
Every weeknight, Monday through Friday at 5:30 approximately.
Somebody gets tapped keg.
Every weeknight.
They're still making some announcements up there, so we'll get the play-by-play when Rick goes to tap it. But when we first started selling cask-conditioned ale, which is beer produced in the traditional British method in 1994, we needed some way to get people interested in it. Mm-hmm. And we devised this way of the customer tapping the cask. You know, if you went and tapped the cask, what are you and your buddies going to drink?
Right, that's
and,
right.
And we got people into it and interested. The way this works is when the drawing to tap the cask, you get a free special glass that you can't buy. We call it our Sellerman glass.
I guess, was it a swing and a miss?
No, they still haven't. He's up there. They haven't even called the number yet.
Oh, okay.
Thomas, the bartender, is working the crowd.
Okay.
What happens, you get the glass with the first beer out of the cask, and then you also get entered into our drawing. Once a year, we invite all our winners back, and we have our Sellerman reunion party, and at that party, if you're here and you've won previously, you have a chance to win a trip for two to the Great American Beer Festival.
Oh, very nice.
Very nice.
And so Thomas is he's a bartender up there. There's a crowd gathered around, and he is definitely working them. So this is a big, big event every day. We're going to tap a cask, and Rick is up there holding his... number and
Rick's up there grinning like a goat eating briars.
So hopefully we'll get to see some cask tapping action. It's like a wide world of sports.
Well, you know,
with beer, more beer.
The English are great. I mean, there's two plugs in that cask. One's called the Keystone. The top one's called the Bung. And there's a little hole in the bung, so there is a bunghole involved in this.
Okay. And I have a bunghole.
And the tap. Oh, here we go. Looks like he was successful.
Very good. Yeah. All right.
What Rick just did is what the English call the tap is the cock. So Rick just penetrated. Just penetrated the keystone with the cock. He had the cock in his hand, and he started pounding on the cock until it penetrated and
the bunghole.
Some beer squirted, and then it was all over.
And aren't you glad this is a family show? We can educate the kids.
That was all beer talk.
It's all beer talk. Nothing unsavory about it.
Well, Nick, I wanted to ask a question about the yeast that they use.
Yeah, we were talking about, and John, you bring up a good point, because we were talking about cask fermented. One thing to point out, the yeast in it is, when we say cask fermented, it's a natural carbonation. There's no CO2 induced.
Correct.
And John was bringing up a question about the yeast here.
Okay.
Well, my main question was, I know mainly in Ireland, Germany, that they have certain strains of yeasts that they kind of keep as their own strains. So I was wondering if you had your own strain of yeast here.
Yes, we do. And I'll kind of clarify a few things. Actually, all of our beers are naturally conditioned like casks. We catch the end of the fermentation in our fermentation vessels, and we will counter pressure it with some CO2
as the beer cools down, because actually the volume reduces. But all our beers are naturally carbonated. Okay. We don't force carbonate any of our products. And the answer to your question of yes, we have a, what we call a house yeast. We purchased a yeast strain many years ago from one of the yeast labs in the United States, and we've really? Been keeping that yeast alive and going, and it is used to ferment the vast majority of the beers we brew. And it is, I'm not sure what to call it, except it's Bosco strain. It loves our breweries, it loves our production technique, it loves what we feed it. It loves living in our fermenters, and it's just a workhorse. As long as we're working it, it's right. happy.
That's
and
great.
So it is. We love that. We love the yeast because it is a relatively clean fermenter, which for most of our beers is what we're looking for. Because the main flavors in most of our beers are malt and hop generated. Now that being said, there are certain styles of beer that you can only brew with certain types of yeast, the Hefeweizen
right.
being one.
And that's what I was going to bring up. I know of breweries that use a yeast no matter what, like Rogue and their Pac-Man. That's probably the most known one that we know about. But the Hef, you got to have that special type yeast. Is there a Bosco's Hef?
No. We don't have the facilities, since we only brew that beer periodically, we don't have the facilities to keep that yeast alive. So when we want to brew a Hefeweizen, we go to our main yeast supplier, White Labs, out of San Diego, and they provide us with yeast for that beer. Now, we may use it several times, and we may use it in all of our breweries. But then usually after that, we just let it go, and when we want Hefeweizen again, we get a clean starting culture for them. So our main yeast is our yeast. But like for something like a Hefeweizen or a wit beer or a lager, when we want to do a lager, we're getting particular yeasts
right.
from the provider. Now, the other aspect of that is in our casks, with a cask conditioned beer, is when you're inducing that second fermentation to naturally carbonate that beer in the cask, right. we oftentimes add a different yeast
really?
Than our regular yeast into it.
Okay.
I would have to look at the schedule to tell you, I'll make sure and look for the dry stout tonight. It'd be great to try it alongside the regular stout, because that cask conditioned is going to have a different yeast in it.
Okay. That'd be interesting.
Now the dry stout that was just tapped in there, and I'm reading on the description, it's an Irish style stout, light body beer, relatively low alcohol content. This surprises me all the time that people, the word stout, we talked about this earlier, has these negative connotations. Heavy filling, etc., when that's really not the truth.
Well, there are heavy styles of stout, but Guinness, amazingly enough, is at the same amount of alcohol as Bud Light.
Yeah, really. Yeah, it's a lower alcohol beer.
And because its flavors are so assertive, people oftentimes associate assertive flavors with alcohol content. And that is just simply not the case.
That was a hammer and win. I was missing the hole altogether.
That's the story. That's the story of your life right there. Missing the hole. Well, Rick, you got your official glass that you pulled. Is that the first glass from the?
That's pretty nice.
There.
Yes.
You got you a Sellerman glass.
Like a better freaking day.
Yeah, you pounded the bung. You inserted the cock into the bung hole and pounded it until it squirted.
Until it squirted.
And that's what she said. So, Rick, how's the beer?
It's excellent, man.
This is the cask
condition. It's a little cloudier than the other.
That's why we give the first one away.
Now that's an Irish stout.
Well, and then what size keg is that?
That is actually, here we go again with the English terms. That's a pin. And the English style sizes of kegs, and that's really a cask and not a keg. And those are different sizes than American casks. That's the equivalent. The pin that you just tapped is 5.4 U.S. gallons. Okay.
Okay, so that's about the same size as my little corny cakes.
Yep. And if a double-sized pin is a firkin, it's 10.8.
Okay, I've heard of firkins.
Okay, so that's what a firkin is. And then if you have a the next size up is a jack.
Never heard of that one.
And there's four firkins in a jack. So a jack's a little over 40.
That's
a little
like 40 gallons.
It's like an imperial barrel. Okay. Now here's where it gets good. The next size up is four jacks. There's four jacks in a Jill.
Oh, man. Are you kidding?
Nope.
So Jill gets around. That's like a, like 160?
No, it's 160 gallons.
That's like the worst porn film.
Four jacks in a Jill.
Man.
Unreal. I can think of two, but the other.
This has a really good flavor to it. I like the call.
Yeah, I noticed that. So
we've all got samples now of the cask that Rick tapped. We had sampled the dry stout that was on the menu. There's a definite difference.
Oh, absolutely. This is much. The carbonation's much more mellow. Carbonation is essentially carbonic acid. Yes, this is hand pumped. The carbonation is much more mellow in this. It really lets more of the beer flavors come to the forefront, the coffee flavors like you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Carbonation is carbonic acid, and it's bright, and it gives you, it gives you bite, and it has its own flavor. So when that is diminished in a product, it really brings different flavors to the forefront.
Do you ever go to the Real Ale Festival?
Not anymore, since they don't have it.
Oh.
The Real Ale Festival, unfortunately, is kaput. And yes, we used to.
What's that British association? Carbo or something like that?
Camera. And they have a great British beer festival, which is a lot of real ale. Yeah. The demise of the Real Ale Festival in Chicago was really sad. My good friend Ray Daniels put that on, and he just had problems every year with venues and licensing in Chicago, which was tremendously difficult. And I always held out. The last one was in 2003. And I always held out hope that he would start it again, but he just recently sold off all his equipment for the festival, so I don't think
kind of put the end of that.
I don't think it'll happen again.
There was the real ale one where they would bypass the carbonation and go for
it's
more.
It's hand pumped.
Hand pumped.
Right, and the Real Ale Festival was the largest gathering of real ales or traditional British ales outside of Great Britain. And typically at that festival, you'd have 200, 250 different hand pumps. A full-blown competition like the Great American Beer Festival, and we did actually win Cask Conditioned Ale Brewery of the Year 1 year.
Wow.
We took six medals 1 year. And
now, where are all these people displaying their wares now? Just all the other beer festivals?
Well, most of those cask ale producers would be like us, and they would be producing regular draft beers and cask ales also. So, there's... I do believe that there's a pretty large cask ale festival in Boston, and there's also a pretty large cask ale festival in San Diego every year. So there's still venues for it, but it's not they tend to be more regional in aspect than nature.
So the cask ale that you have to be in a brew pub to get some of it, you cannot buy this at the store. It's just not the same.
Yeah, it just wouldn't work.
This is where, if you want to taste what beer was like hundreds and hundreds of years ago, before they invented CO2, before they had all the lines and everything, this is what it is. This is where you taste the richness, the depth of the flavors, and it is, as you're all tasting, it's different.
It's more malty.
It's intenser. It's like a richer flavor.
Intenser, same word.
Very good.
I think it's definitely a really good breakfast.
There you go.
You need to team up with Starbucks and offer it in the morning.
That's right. This would be good at the drive-thru.
I tell my partners, we need to open for breakfast, and they say, "Oh, we're going to have to have a whole nother menu." And I'm going, "No, we just need to have stout, coffee, and donuts."
That's right. No, this would go good with eggs too. Tim can come up with some omelets together.
With Southern flavor, right?
Yeah, there you go. All right, so we're going to take another break and come back and for the last segment get some of the local folks around the bar at Bosco's. And here's one more Tab Benoit for you.
The home of the blues. How long ago one morning Sauvignon up the Mississippi. Up through the Delta, up to Memphis, Tennessee, wherever people struggle, y'all struggle to be free. The blues is the music that fanned the flame, that burned in the soul, y'all, Little Walter and Elmo James. The blues is the music, yeah, that anyone can feel. It comes from the cries of the people that work the cotton field. The blues grew out of pain, but now it can heal. And the more I sing it, y'all, the better I feel. And nobody can give it away. Nobody can take it away. Nobody can throw it away. And it can't even pray it away. And the blues is a feeling that will never die.
Without B.B. King, without Bobby Blue Blaine doing his thing, without T-Bone Walker and Howlin' Wolf, without Bessie and Big Mama strutting their stuff. Well, well,
a young Eric Clapton, y'all, would have never crossed the sea without old Lightning, Jimmy Reed, Muddy Waters to grow up on. Hey, the Beatles and the Stones, they'd have never left home. No, no, I don't.
Tell the truth now. Of the common man, story of a people in a hostile land, built on a foundation that'll never fall, thanks to Robert Craig, Stevie Ray, and Taj Mahal. Nobody can give it away.
Nobody can take it away.
Oh no, you can't even throw it away, dog.
They can't even pray it away.
The blues is a feeling
that will never die.
Never die.
And the blues is here to stay.
musical selection. You got to go to the website, find out what the name of the song was, and so forth and so on. Great time in Memphis in May. Great time so far here at Bosco's. And
he was a little more Cajun than I thought.
He's a New Orleans guy. He's
first I was thinking he was country, and then he started bringing on the Louisiana Cajun.
He does, and I tell you,
I think he has quite a wide range.
If you listen to these songs, because we were there, and you gotta agree.
He's a good looking man.
He was bringing it though. I mean, he was really having a good time. Yeah. Very loud.
I can appreciate it.
I mean, it sounded great. It was great.
Doesn't mean I'm gay, Mike.
You can appreciate a painting without taking it off the wall.
That's right, exactly.
Yes. So we're joined here by Billy from the Bosco's Bar, and Chuck went here and said, "Okay, I got the perfect guy for you to talk to. He's representative of the people who come to the Bosco's." So no pressure, Billy. The eyes of the world are upon you.
Don't hold that against them.
All right, so you've got a mug. What's the deal with the mug?
The mug is actually, they have a thing every year where you actually can purchase a mug from them. And you get it on Monday nights. It's $2 to fill the mug. They have mug club parties. They have special events. They have dinners. They have all kinds of things that allow you to kind of get preferential treatment. And it actually holds a little bit more than the standard pint glass. And actually did an Excel spreadsheet, so it pays for itself if you drink like I do in about a week and a half.
Cool.
So it really works out.
Now
I'm sure for the average person, it doesn't pay out, but quite thick.
No. It usually takes the average person about 6 months.
So okay. Yours says Bombay IPA. Did you get to choose?
No, every year they feature a beer on it.
Okay. So it isn't that you're partial necessarily to the IPA.
The IPA is good.
Put IPA in that mug?
No, well, you can put whatever you want to.
Oh, okay.
Because you got to have the Hefeweizen right now.
Yes, I do.
Oh, man, that Hefeweizen's good.
I kind of get as much of the seasonal as I possibly can because I do a lot of traveling. So when I come back in town, I like to see what's new and what's on the cask.
Okay, well, good. Well, then maybe you can, being a traveler here, you've been to other brew pubs.
Yes, I have.
And not that we're trying to do a comparison, but what would you say is kind of the commonality of brew pubs all over the place?
More than anything else is something kind of light. You know, with a Flaming Stone here, usually some type of light lager that seems to have the mass appeal to anyone that would come in first. And it's nice because people get to come in, they get to experience something that they've maybe never had before.
In California, it's the Blonde.
Yes, it is.
All brew pubs have a Blonde.
Yes, it is. I mean, Strauss and Carl Strauss.
So you're not
getting
bowled over first. Exactly. It's a little kind of a gateway beer.
Exactly.
Right?
It introduces you into what's available and what's out there. And the nice part about it is it starts to bring you up to other beers that are there.
Okay. And so we were talking about earlier about the brew pubs and all the different types of beers, and depending on what day you come in, like you just said earlier, you come in, you see what's new,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's always a diversity, something new to try and learn. And you see the same sort of thing at brew pubs. So we've been kind of promoting the idea that a brew pub is a great place to go and learn about beer.
Oh, absolutely.
Try all the different facets and aspects.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you something I noticed was a lot of the people around here real friendly and helpful and teaching you about the different beers. Do you
except
experience
for the person
that?
Who wins the Tap the Keg guy.
Right.
They're
right.
Kind of mean and ugly to that guy.
Yeah. That's because he beat all of us.
But do you experience that in other brew pubs around the country?
Yes, you do. It's really? It's very much a community. One of the things that I like the most about the brew pub mindset, especially here at Bosco's, is the server staff, people like that, people behind the bar, the people that are coming to you. They know their product. They
I mean,
know
look who's right behind us right
exactly.
here. Right?
We got the brewmaster himself behind us. So they're very good about talking to you about it. And the things that maybe even they aren't that fond of, you also find people sitting at the bar having certain beers that is their taste. They're able to come back to you and go, okay, well, this is the reason why I like this beer. This is
okay.
what I'm getting on.
I learned to love craft beer because I started brewing my own beer. And, you know, I just fell in love with the whole everything about beer, you know, that whole thing. What brought you into it? Are you a brewer? Or
I do some home brewing as well. I actually got started on it. It's a long, complicated story we'll get into, but I got experienced overseas with beers. My first was, of course, very young. I was of age, but very young, experiencing just beer and thinking, what's the appeal here? And it was years later that when I had a friend of mine that had been traveling overseas, brought back a bunch of different beers, some Belgians, some other ones, and said, oh, no, you haven't experienced beer yet. Let me show you what it can be. And they were wonderful. I mean, I had no idea they could taste like anything other than just kind of watered-down product.
I'm personally happy that there's been a shakedown in the craft beer industry. Some of the bad brewers have fallen out.
Yes.
The good ones have left.
So, Jimmy, you're like lurking back here. We asked Jimmy, the brewer, to come over, and Jimmy's been on gosh, several.
He's been on our St. Mary's.
On the St. Mary's and the
he
video.
He was on our video.
You're just a regular podcast celebrity, just about.
Hear, hear.
And you're the guy behind the scenes making all this happen for everybody out here. So what's next? What do you got coming down the pipe here? I know we got some beer pairings coming up. We've got we're in May, coming into the summer months. What are we looking for at Bosco's? What kind of interesting beers we got?
Well, beers coming up. We have the honey wheat beer. It is, we've had an American wheat beer, we do a Hefeweizen, we do a honey wheat. All three have the same grain bill, but just different variations. Hefeweizen's got a Hefeweizen wheat. The American wheat beer is just plain two-row malt, wheat, and our house yeast strain. And then the honey wheat, we incorporate 5 gallons of honey that we get from a local group in Little Rock that gets honey for us. And we add 5 gallons of honey to it, and that ferments out and leaves a little bit of the honey flavor.
Do you use rice hulls in your honey beers or your wheat beers?
No.
Now what, you just threw some technical deal in there.
I just brewed a wheat beer yesterday, and I used a bunch of rice hulls, and they just absorb a ton of liquid, you know.
So is that the idea? You throw rice hulls in there?
The wheat gets a little mushy, okay. So it stops the sparge.
Well, I know,
we just mash delicately and sparge delicately and go slowly with it, and don't worry about getting things gummed up too bad.
Now, in a wheat beer, what's the percentage of wheat to malted barley?
We're running about 60% barley, 40% wheat, right around there for most of our beers.
Okay.
The wheat beers, at least.
So a lot of good beers come down the pot. And
did you hear the honeybees are disappearing?
Yeah, it's very, very scary. It's not just for us having honey for our beer, but pollination across the board.
Yeah.
All right, so Billy, you're drinking a Hefeweizen.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your beer of choice, or are you just, this is kind of like your warm-up, you got a ritual, you got
I thought
this.
I was drinking the IPA.
No, I've got the Hefeweizen actually right now.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, I'm drinking the Hefeweizen, mainly because it's Memphis.
Awesome beer.
And it's,
awesome,
you know,
beer.
200 degrees outside, so you want kind of a nice, fruity, light beer that's going on that's going to cleanse you when you first come in.
So that's
what
John
minus, 80 degrees. Yeah, exactly.
We're enjoying the Memphis weather, where right now, since it's May, it'll only kill small children and old people.
Exactly.
Whereas by mid-July, August,
it kills
outside,
everybody.
Yep. You're going to die if you're
everyone's
out more than an hour. There's people literally bursting into flames. And Hefeweizen is known to be
A quencher of those flames.
Exactly. It will quench it as effective as any fire extinguisher. You can drink it, do it internally, or throw it on somebody. It'll put the fire right
out. It's definitely
well,
a great beer.
Chuck, I want to thank you for inviting us over to Bosco's. It's a wonderful club. And are you going to the Great American Beer Fest?
I'll be there.
Okay, I hope to see you there.
We will be there. And
Jimmy, as usual, thank you.
Very well.
Always
for having us.
Great to have your beer. Billy, thanks for joining us.
Man of the street.
And Mike, John.
And regular,
I'm glad I could be a part of it.
Crowd.
This was an awesome event.
Yeah.
Myself as well.
So we look forward to getting back on track and
here's catch a plane.
Got to catch a plane. Got to go find some more beers out there. We'll see you next time.
Drive safe.
Come back to see us.
I would climb the highest mountain. I would swim across the sea just to feel your sweet love and what it does to me. What it does to me. What it does to me. Do anything
need to have your